Make May your month for big cash winnings at your neighborhood Washington Gold Casino. Stop by the Silver Dollar Casinos in SeaTac, Renton, and Mill Creek and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
QBs must be punished.
I worked myself into a lather disagreeing with myself.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Oh, no, you is the worst.
And the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Me and my beard, we'll pump up the crowd.
Yeah! Yeah!
All right, this hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Brock and Salk, and we got... what, 8 days to go before the draft? 8 days to find out the fate of Earl Thomas and whether he stays or whether he goes. I think this is the biggest story in town. You and I were talking about it a couple of minutes ago, Brock, and just trying to figure out. I mean, Earl Thomas is either going to have to – there's only three options here. You make a deal, you sign him long-term, or you let this thing ride its way out here over the course of the next year. And I just think that last one is so dangerous with the potential for a holdout that I don't think they want to deal with any of that mess. And so you kind of come back down to two real strong options, sign them long term or make a deal with Dallas or somebody else here in the next 8 days. And I don't, for whatever reason, it doesn't feel like they are headed towards a long-term contract.
Yeah, and feel is such a big part of this.
I know.
And feeling is such a big part of this because, you know what? For like 7 years, this run has been unbelievable. And, wow, we took care of guys. And sure, there's bumps in the road. And you know what? Cam held out. And it wasn't great and whatever. But by and large, they took care of them. They never got into some of these issues. But this is how it ends, man. This is how it ends in the NFL.
Yeah.
Just about anywhere. And even in good old New England, who's done it better than anybody for the last two decades. Look at how this thing's more than likely going to end there in flames. Right. Well, now Brady say, I may hold on. I haven't really said whether I'm going to play this year in Gronk and the whole Wickersham article from last year. Yeah.
Is Seth Wickersham the angel of death?
Maybe.
Like if he shows up at your town, run. Like if you like your football team at all and you hear that Seth Wickersham is going to show up and maybe write a little article about what's going on behind the scenes. Just sell the stocks.
I'd really like to do a little feature on Brock and Salk. No, no. I'd really like to do a little feature on the Russell Wilson Passing Academy.
No, we're good. We're all
don't
set. Don't let Seth. He shows up here last offseason. The next thing you know, Richard Sherman's gone. Michael Bennett's gone. Earl Thomas probably going to be traded. Seahawks miss the playoffs. Shows up in New England, writes that thing's a mess. And now all of a sudden, Brady, who knows? And Gronkowski's not showing up for workouts. And they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo anymore. What a mess. All right, let's talk to Jake Heaps. He takes a few minutes to join us right now here on the Venue Kings Hotline. Good morning, Jake. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
And you're a busy cat, huh?
Hey, trying, man. Trying.
Yeah, well, we've seen you everywhere. You're running the camps, Russell Wilson Passing Academy, obviously locally. You're just down in Portland yesterday. I saw you with some pictures. Were you down at the Russell Wilson, the QB to QB camp when that thing got taped?
Yeah, I was actually. So I was down there, just so happened to be the same time as the taping. Kind of wanted me around a little bit to just kind of, get my two cents on the deal. But more so, it was more just to, work out with Russell and so we were able to fit all of it in the filming and the working out. And so it was a really fun week being down there in LA with Russ.
Did you work out with Saquon at all while you were there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the funny story about that is Russ is trying to fit in these workouts. So we're literally during Russ's lunch break, we in between shooting each guy, we go out and throw and lift down there at UCLA, and then. And then Saquon got done with his taping, and we were down there working out. And all of a sudden, Saquon, he just kind of walks through the weight room and sees, through the glass doors what we're doing. And he looks over, and then he comes out in the field and is like, "Hey, can I join you guys?" And we're like, "Sure. I mean, do you have cleats?" And he has his backpack. He's got his cleats ready to go. He's got. he's got his towels. I mean, the kid was ready to roll. And so it was awesome. He came out there, worked out, special talent, special kid. I mean, the guy is going to be extremely successful in the NFL, not because you know, all the hype and the projections and all that stuff. But this dude knows how to be a pro. He understands what it takes. And I mean, not to mention the kid's a freak of nature.
Yeah. I mean, let's be clear. You guys were working out. Jake Heaps takes the 15-pound dumbbells to do walking lunges. Well, that's fine. Russell picks up the 50-pound dumbbells. That's better. And Saquon takes like the 120-pound dumbbells, right?
He's like, he's a freak.
What's up, dude?
Easy.
Easy. I was with the 50s. I might have been struggling a little bit more, but, you know, try to keep up.
What's Russell's mindset, Jake? You mentioned Jake Heaps with us here and doing
it's not Tom Brady. We get this every time, right? That people think Jake sounds just like Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever heard that, Jake?
Yeah, the last time I was on the show, yeah. You guys were mentioning the guys were, the listeners were saying
it's amazing.
That, so I'll take it every time.
I think it's even more today. Like when you're standing, when you were here in with us, like, you know, you don't look like Tom Brady necessarily.
Kind of.
I mean, but close. But like, I know the difference between how he looks and how Tom Brady looks.
Right.
But when you hear Jake on the phone, he sounds just like Tom Brady. Yeah. So it's really bizarre.
So Tom Brady with us this morning. Tom, what is Russell Wilson's mindset these days?
Well, you know, I think Russ is, you know, at the mindset of, you know, he's got to have the best year of his career. You know, I think he feels that way every single year. But I think this is definitely a year where, when you look at the Seahawks and the organization, this is a very new football team, new faces. It presents itself a new challenge. I believe there's a lot more on Russ's shoulders, this year. And I think from him, his mindset, is just trying to be the best he can be, and making sure that he's in the best shape, not only as a physical football player, but, you know, mechanically and with his footwork and all that stuff. So the attention to detail has really, really, been a big, increase in this off season.
Hey, so help me with this, because one of the things I've tried to figure out is where this relationship is going between Russell and the team, and I mean the management, coaching staff of the team, and the leadership vacuum. So, if I read what's happening this off season, on one hand, the Seahawks have really cleared the way for Russell to lead this team. Michael Bennett's not here. Richard Sherman's not here. We'll see if Earl Thomas is going to be there. Cam Chancellor's probably not there. Cliff Averill's probably not there. I mean, all of a sudden, a lot of the real leaders on this team and the loud voices on this team step aside. And some of the implication is that, okay, Russ, here you go. It's your team. Step things up. On the other side of it, though, we keep hearing, well, they brought in Brian Schottenheimer, and part of the reason why is to hold Russell accountable, and there's got to be a level of accountability. It feels almost like a carrot and stick thing. Is it, like, what do you think is going on?
it's a really good question, Salk. It really is. You know, I think that, like you've heard, I think there's mixed messaging going on, you know, a little bit. You know, when you've heard in this offseason, I think you also heard it during the season. For example, you know, Russ, he's really taking the team on his shoulders, and, you know, he's doing incredible things, you know, 80, almost 90% of the offense. And then, you know, the messaging of, you know, well, the guy's not getting it done in the early on in the game. It's like, you know, that you can't deny those things, that, you know, Russ does need to get better. But, I mean, gosh, where would that offense be without Russell Wilson last year, right? I think the organization, like you said, it presents a new challenge. It presents a new look as a football team. And I think, you know, from that standpoint, I think, you know, Russell is excited about the new challenge in terms of, like you said, there's not as many big voices in that locker room. And it's not that Russ is going to change or do anything different. He's going to still be the same guy. I mean, he's been a team captain every year he's been there, with those big name and voices, right? So it's not like he's going to go out there and just, you know, assume this new leadership role that he already hasn't been playing. But I think you got a lot of younger guys that are going to be really looking to him, for direction, if that makes sense. And so I think the other side of it too is that you have to look as an organization, what they're deciding to do, you know, with their future. And so I think it's a fascinating thing. I think there's a lot of moving pieces, contracts, and all that. I mean, this is a business. And so the Seahawks are trying to figure out what the future is and what that's going to look like in the next year or two.
Jake Heaps here with us, Russell Wilson Passing Academy. Does so many great things with all the local kids and branching out now and doing it regionally as well. Jake, it's fun to see you guys flourishing down there because I know the amount of work you all put into it. Does Russell like to be coached hard? So when you come down and you train with him, right, and just as you're pushing these young kids fundamentally and their back leg and the release and everything else, does Russell demand that? Does he want that from you to be kind of coached critically and you know, attention to detail as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I honestly, you know, things have been so busy, Brock, that, you know, I it would be a waste of my time if Russ wasn't all in when I'm down there and listening and trying to get soak up as much information. I mean, I think we have really good conversations and are able to talk ball. And you know, I think what Russ does, like any good quarterback does, is they ask the whys. You know, it's not just, hey, do this. Okay, coach. It's why do I need to do that? And so you're able to have that dialogue there. I mean, Brock, if I'm trying to change little things in your throwing motion, when you're playing in your career, you're going to want to know why, and you're going to you know, challenge it to make sure that it's maximizing what you're doing.
What does he want to clean up? What are there anything specifically that you would love as you work with him and he would love to just fine tune a little bit?
Yeah, I think, the other thing too is that you have to understand that, you know, he is an MVP caliber player, Pro Bowl player. And you know, I think I don't think there's much argument in terms of what he's been able to do,
right.
Is that he's a top five quarterback, and takes a lot of the responsibility and the burden of the offense on himself. And so for me, I'm not going in there and trying to change his whole game. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to help him get 1% better. You don't go out there and fix Tom Brady and try and retool his whole mechanics. You're just trying to get him 1% better, right? So, you know, I think some of the things that we worked on is just, you know, firing his back hip through a little bit. You know, he has a tendency to, you know, leave that thing behind. So, you know, making sure that he's maximizing, you know, his all of his powers on his throws, which, you know, leads to also accuracy. And then, you know, just kind of his footwork in terms of his drops, allowing him to be consistent every single time. And, you know, I'm sure it was the same thing for you as it is for almost every guy in the NFL is, you know, sometimes when you're throwing to, you know, Brock, your right side, right-handed quarterback's left side, you know, sometimes you leave your hip closed when you're throwing these outbreaking routes and, you know, it kind of stops you from, you know, getting everything through. And so, you know, we've been working on little things like that. And the other thing, too, is, you know, I think Russ really has wanted to work on pocket mechanics. And so, you know, you guys ask, okay, well, what does that mean? Russ is probably the best in the game at getting out of the pocket and making plays with his feet and doing all that. But he's really, you know, I mean, he watches Breeze, he watches Brady, he watches all these guys who are the best in the game at playing within the pocket. And it's just those little subtle moves within the pocket, you know, moving one step left or right, you know, making explosive subtle moves and then still being ready to throw and deliver an accurate football instead of just trying to run, you know, making little subtle moves within the pocket to reset my feet and get that ball out. And so, you know, those are little things, you know, that we've worked on, you know, this off season. And, you know, I think he's excited about where he's at. Nice. I'm excited about where he's at and, you know, looking forward to seeing him have another great year.
You think Earl's here next year?
You know, it's a fascinating question because you look at the value of what you're able to get from Earl. Personally, in my opinion, Earl Thomas is a staple of any franchise. So, you know, when you look at the roster of this team, how many guys can you sit there and tell me or tell us, man, that guy is a staple of this team, defense and offensively, right? There's just, you know, it's not saying that it's a bad thing, right? I mean, you know, like they've said, is, you know, hey, we've had guys before, younger guys like Richard Sherman, who people didn't know about, who stepped up. But as of right now, they don't have as many of those guys. And I think Earl Thomas is a game changer on any field, any franchise, any team. And so, especially with the way that this team loves to play defense. And so I would think that you would want to keep this guy. But I get it. He's getting older. I don't think he's lost a step. But what's the value that you can get from him in a trade at some point if you did want
to
get rid of
him? You ever talk noise to him, Jake, when you're throwing seeds that, you know, your year and you threw a little seam? You ever talk a little noise to Earl?
You know what? Earl is such a different cat, you know, and Earl's such a different cat.
So that's a no.
Yes, actually, you get him on the ping pong table and all that stuff. Uh-huh. Absolutely, you know. But Earl is such a serious guy.
Okay, so do you trade him? You trade him for a second round pick, Jake? You're on the clock in 8 days. You're on the clock. You're the Seattle Seahawks. You got the first pick in the draft, or the 18th pick in the first round. And all of a sudden, Dallas comes calling, you know, and they want to make a move. Do you trade Earl for a second and a fourth, a second and another player? Did you put what value do you put on Earl? You say no, absolutely, without a first, he's going to still be a Seattle Seahawk.
To me, if you're not getting a first round pick out of it either, to me, it's not worth the value. I think Earl is absolutely a first round value, and you need to be. If you don't have Earl Thomas on your football team anymore, then you better be getting a top flight first round compensation for it, because Earl is a once in a generation football player.
So here's Tom Brady talking about deflated footballs. Let's see how close it is.
Is it like 8 touchdowns a year? He spikes the ball and he deflates the ball, which I love that because I like, you know, the deflated ball.
Maybe a little deeper. Can you go a little deeper, Jake? Can you go an octave down and you'd nail Tom Brady? What do you think?
Let's see. I mean, that was kind of low. I'm not sure. I mean,
it's pretty close. Dude, it is identical through these headphones. It is so crazy how much you sound like Brady.
It's uncanny.
You got a second. Well, I know you're on sort of the second career. You got a third or fourth career here going as a Tom Brady
voice model.
Yeah, boy, exactly. Always good.
I'll get in touch with his people, and we'll see what we can do.
All right. Well, good luck with that. I think he's got a lot of people. So,
yeah.
As do you, obviously, Jake. We know you have a lot of people as well. So, Jake, thank you. Good to catch up with you, man. We'll do it again.
Yeah. No problem. Thanks, guys.
All right, there you go. There's Jake Heap, so we always like talking to. Of course, on the Venue Kings hotline, he sounds remarkably like Tom Brady.
It really is remarkable.
So
it's
strange.
Nuts.
I totally disagree with what he just said.
About Earl?
About Earl. And as he was saying, this is what kind of crystallized for me. You have to make your decision on Earl not based on value of what you're going to get back. You just can't make the decision on that. Now, obviously, if it's going to be the difference between just getting a fifth-round pick and a first-round pick, okay, fine. But if you're the decision on Earl is this, can I re-sign him or not? He's a great player. He's a Hall of Fame level safety. To me, one of the most undervalued positions in the NFL, safety. A position that helps you win, and he's a game changer for your franchise.
And the four of you think he's got another 5 or 6 years on average.
Well, but not necessarily good five
Maybe
or six
Maybe not all
years.
At that level, but he's still going
to
play.
The only question you need to ask is, can I get Earl signed long term? To the deal you want, whether it's 3 years or whatever, can you get Earl signed to the deal you want? If the answer is yes, then sign him. If the answer is no, then trade him. And I'm not sure I have a lot of, for me, and I know it can be kind of black or white, and I know there are some areas of gray in there, but there aren't that many for me here. Either you get him on the deal you want, and you sign him because he's a cornerstone of your franchise, and he wants to be here, and you make it happen, or you move on, and you say, all right, whether it's a first-round pick or a second-round pick, I got to get as much as I can, and everything else is just posturing and trying to get as much leverage as possible leading up to that. But there's no other decision here to be made. I'm not like Jake. I don't say, oh, Earl's first-round value, so I got to get a first-round pick. If I'm not signing him, then I got to get as much as I possibly can for him. Yeah. And if that's a second and a third instead of a first and a fourth, so be it.
Because you don't want the headache of everything else. Like, you want it black and white, and it's pretty simple. Do you want this deal or not? Okay.
You want to be here or not?
Hey, Brock, you want this deal or not? One of my last conversations, my last year in the NFL, in fact, on the phone, and I was parked outside of Bally's that is no longer there. I was there in the Houghton area. It's no longer there, where Dennis Bounds and I used to run on treadmills and talk to each other. It's no longer there. And I sat in that parking lot, And coach said it to me point blank. Do you want to be here or not?
Right.
This is the deal. Okay. Well, I want this kind of guarantee. I want this assurance. I want this other. No. Do you want this or not?
But you were just getting bulldozed in that case.
Well, and then I just said, I can't tell you right now.
You had
now.
No leverage.
I had decent because I could go back to Indy. I legitimately had that. I could go back to Indy where I could have got it, you know, a few hundred grand guaranteed or whatever on my minimum deal. So, no, I had a little bit. But we finish up, and I call my agent. I don't know why I'm in the middle of this. This is what you're being paid to do. Why am I sweating bullets outside the Bally's here, and Dennis Bowen's waiting for me? And Marvin said, well, how'd it go? I said, terrible. I'm not an agent. I'm terrible. He's like, he was mad. He's yelling at me. It was horrible. I go and work out. Great workout, by the way. I go and work out. I come back to the car, cell phone. I didn't look at my phone. I put in the locker. I threw it in there. Come back out and look, and Marvin's got a message from Marvin. Call me back right away. Call him back. He's like, I don't know what you did, but, yeah, you got most of your deal guaranteed. So what I thought was just a terrible thing ended up working out pretty well. But it is. What do you want? What do you want, Earl? What do you want? Because and then ultimately, Mike.
You got to figure that out, man. I'm sorry. There's no in-between.
Okay,
here.
But well, here's the in-between. Do you think the Seahawks, based on what we've heard this offseason, there wasn't a deal for Richard. I don't think there was a deal for Richard. Do you? I mean, Richard basically came back with him and said this.
This year?
Yeah.
What kind of a deal? You mean a trade?
No, I'm saying a contract, right? Would there have been a contract for Richard, right? That when he flew and he left,
Richard was so upset about the way things were going here and the direction of the program. I mean, Brock, how could he have ever re-signed in a place that was so mean to poor little Richard?
Do you think John and Pete in the organization, do you think they want to do a deal with Earl right now?
I don't know, but that's the only decision that needs to be made. Do you want to get a deal done with Earl? Does Earl want to get a deal done with you? If there's a deal to be made, then make it.
Mm.
Then make it. And make Earl part of the cornerstone for the future. Say he's a great player. If you don't want to make a deal and you don't think a deal can be made or he doesn't want to be here, then trade him. And trade him for whatever you can get. Get as much as you possibly can and leverage it and lie about it and do everything you can in the minutes leading up to the draft.
Yep.
But once push comes to shove, you got to take the best thing available, trade him, and move on unless you can get a deal done. Because playing out the string here, it just doesn't work for me. I'm sorry.
It doesn't.
Letting him hold out, ruining this season, coming in a game or two late.
Yep.
I mean, I can paint you the scenario. Yeah. It's a disaster.
Yeah.
Right? And then at the end of all that, he walks or you franchise tag him. Neither one of those are palatable options.
Yep.
They're not. Yep. And I'm all for it. Hey, if you could get Earl Thomas on a long-term deal, I'd be in on that. I really would. I would have no problem signing Earl Thomas
to
a 3-4 year deal, 5-year deal, even if you had to do it, because I think he's a cornerstone type player. But if you can't get that done or you don't have the appetite for it or you feel like you've got to move on, then do it.
And you disagree with Jake Ware? Because he's basically saying so much of that.
Well, I was just disagreeing with the idea
of first or bust.
Well, Earl's a first round value, so no, I couldn't do it for a second and a fourth.
Mm.
Yeah, if that's all you can get, then tough noogies.
Yeah.
Like, coming back and playing out the string and holding out, that's not an option for
me. No. It's just not a win for anybody. It's not going to be a win for Earl. I don't think that would help him in any way over his future. You know, but then ultimately, Earl's going to play a role in this, too. What do you want, Earl? I want $14 million a year, period. I want to be the highest paid player. That's what I am. I'm the best in the game. I talk to anybody. I'm the best in the game. I'm not settling for a penny less. Okay, well, that's just not the way we do business.
And I'm sorry, I'm not buying this one either. Franchising him is totally palatable, Salk. Safety cap hits are very reasonable. I know it's the palatable from a salary cap perspective, but it's not palatable from a team-building perspective.
Nope.
Not when everything else the Seahawks are doing right now seems to be all about minimizing drama. All this does is ratchet up drama.
Yep.
Either you sign him long-term and squelch whatever drama is going to happen, you trade him and you bring in the new guys, because if you're allowing him to stick around angry, I'm sorry. Look at everything the Seahawks have done in the last couple of months. Richard Sherman, drama, gone. Michael Bennett, drama, gone. Malik McDowell, even, drama, gone. Just move out of here. We don't want any of this drama. Colin Kaepernick, yeah, we'll talk to you, but we don't want the drama. Gone. Forget about it. It's about keeping things on the straight and narrow right now. They don't want drama. And that's why you either got to end it with Earl by signing him or end it with Earl by trading him. Because bringing it in for a performance, no thank you. I'm not up for that. And I don't think they are either. I really don't. I really don't think they'll be up to just bring him back and let him stick around for another year before being franchised. So what do they do with one of these picks? Whether it's Bill Barnwell's scenario where they have 22 and 19?
I got a no drama here
for
you.
Or the Seahawks at number 8. Do you have somebody that would actually take?
I got a big ugly with no drama.
So you would actually take this guy at number 18? Oh, my God. It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Fun to catch up there with our guy Jake Heaps. We'll be talking some Jake Locker coming up in a half hour. A story coming out in Sports Illustrated from Greg Bishop, and Greg will be in to discuss here at 9 o'clock. Always fun to get Greg in and just get his stories of all the places he's been and people he's talked to recently. He's always one of your favorites as well.
And we live vicariously through some of his travels.
I would think that's true. Yeah. He does a lot of really cool stuff, and he's got a really great piece coming out this week on Jake Locker and what's happened to him and why he ultimately decided to walk away from the game, even though there was still a lot of interest in him continuing to play. You talk about things ending well versus ending ugly.
Yeah.
The Jake Locker ending is an interesting one as well.
And then it's just an unbelievably sad. We really hardly touched the Humboldt story, and he got a chance to get close to that. And that will be a remarkable.
I found it really hard to even talk about that story. It's so tragic, and I'm not. I mean, I almost don't know what to add to the horror of the whole thing, but he was there, and we'll talk to Greg about that coming up at 9 o'clock. In the meantime, we're 8 days away from the Seahawks making a decision at number 18, whether they keep the pick or whether they deal it. They'll have a choice to make once they get there. And Brock's been profiling some of the players most likely to be in their crosshairs. Who do we have today?
With the 18th pick in the NFL draft.
Brock Heward's draft profile. The names worth watching for the Seahawks' first-round pick. Every morning at 8:30 leading up to the draft.
The Seattle Seahawks select
Will Hernandez.
Guard, UTEP. Offensive guard, UTEP. And I'm talking to you, Roger, in Tacoma. This is your quintessential guard. 6'2", 348, and one powerful, mean, and angry football player. I first noticed him, to be fair, on a Friday night. It was a Friday night game. I'm on the road. The hay's in the barn. Some of our meetings are over. I like to just veg out and watch. And Dusty Dvorak and Adam Amin were doing the game. It was at UTEP. And UTEP was awful. Arguably the worst program in college football. 0-12 last year, fired the coach Sean Kuechler, and a longtime NFL line coach. Tried to come in there and be a line guy. Changed the line of scrimmage, and it just didn't work. And the only thing poor Adam and Dusty could do was highlight one football player that night. And that player was Will Hernandez, who was an absolute animal. And poor Dusty's like, these other guys is nice, but this is the All-American. This is the guy that makes a difference. And once your eyes actually watch a guard play, you watch him pile drive and annihilate people. And you watch him do that throughout. And then you watch him at the combine, Mike, at 6'2", 348. Number one amongst the offensive linemen, benching 37 times, 225, paying off everything you see on the field with unbelievable strength. And then you see him at the Senior Bowl, most importantly. That is where he became a first-round pick. It was at the Senior Bowl because the big man moves better than you would anticipate. At 350 pounds, was one of the top seven guys when it came to the three-cone drill, being able to actually slide and move. And that is where Mike Mayock, he uses the name Richie Incognito, and so do I, because that's what he looks like, a brawler. But he's not in any way off the field associated with that attachment. It's on the field and just the nastiness he's going to bring to your team.
I see Richie Incognito. I mean, they both have this nasty edge. They're maulers in the run game, and you think they're not going to be real good pass protection because of their feet, but they've got really solid feet. I think Hernandez is a day one starter in the NFL, and you want to get in a fight in the phone booth? That's the guy right there, Will Hernandez.
I want to get in a fight in a phone booth.
Do you really?
Especially with that music playing in the background.
Do those guys at the combine even know what a phone booth is? It's a legitimate question.
Really good point.
It is a legitimate question. They don't. I don't think many of them have maybe
certainly never been inside of.
No, I have no idea what that. What a phone booth.
What into a fight in a small walk-in closet?
What is even a phone booth?
They've seen the Colin Farrell movie, and that's it.
Possibly.
Yeah, I don't know. We're now getting to be the point where that might be even past the day.
I'm reminded a little bit. I'm reminded a little bit of Daniel Jeremiah, a tweet that I love from him. We talked about, I think, almost an entire segment of what Daniel Jeremiah, an old scout now at the NFL Network, has learned. Where did he fail over the last 10 years as he's projected guys? And he said with offensive linemen and guards in particular, took for granted the ability to anchor. My goodness, man. When you're in that space right there, from guard to guard, you have to have an anchor. You have to be able to just plant your feet, and no matter what force is coming at you, punch it right in the face and stop it. And we have seen how many guards here, time and time again. Okay, J.R. Sweezy could cut people down in the run game. He could do that. James Carpenter got better at it, got rewarded, actually, and he won the Super Bowl when he was an offensive guard because he had that kind of power and strength. This guy's smarter. He's much more versed. I think he's much more capable to come in day one where James Carpenter struggled with his weight, struggled to be a pro mightily his first few years. This guy comes in and he anchors right away. And Charles Davis, my final point on Will Hernandez, yeah, there's an advantage. Sean Kugler was not a head coach, but boy, is he a good offensive line coach, a background with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you see that in Will Hernandez's play.
When I think of him, I think of those Iowa offensive linemen. They get a great offensive line coach, and Kirk Ferentz, their head coach, is an offensive line guru and technician. What did Hernandez have at UTEP? Had his O-line coach? His head coach was Sean Kugler, who's now back in the NFL in Denver as an offensive line coach. Remember, that's who Hernandez played for at the Senior Bowl as well.
And to answer your inevitable question that's coming, mm-hmm. You take him at 18, Brock. I don't take him at 18. I don't. I will this week. There's going to be somebody this week in the next 2 days that I will take at 18. I don't. But Bill Barnwell, who put out those trade scenarios, we'll come back to in the 9 o'clock hour. Seahawks trade from 18 with the Bills to 22 because a quarterback fell. Maybe it was Josh Rosen. And they get a third. They get a fifth. They take him at 22. You're sitting there at 22. Do you consider a Will Hernandez, a guy that's going to just solidify everything you want, who's going to fit with Mike Solari, who's going to run the power run game, who's going to provide some punch, who's actually going to give Russell Wilson a pocket and space around him? And, oh, you got to block Aaron Donald. You know what you got to do with a guy that runs 4-5 and Ndamukong Suh? You better bring a sword to the sword fight. You better. And this guy is a sword. I think I didn't screw that up.
Is that a thing?
Yes, you better bring a sword to that sword fight. And a Conan the Barbarian sword when you're dealing with those two animals that you got to block from L.A. And this dude's a big, powerful guy.
I love it. All right. I mean, I've heard knife to a gunfight, but I've never heard a sword to a sword fight.
I'm going with it.
Please do.
It felt good.
So while you were talking, I've been looking up pictures of Will Hernandez. They're all over the map. Like, I have like 9 different opinions of him.
Do you want to do a little body image thing here?
A little bit. Okay. He's fat.
Because Brock would love to.
He looks
fat. If you're down, he's down.
He looks fat.
Okay, look at me right now.
Yeah.
Okay, where I sit here in the studio right now, with where I stand, as you know, I've got small pecs.
Yes.
Okay, they bounce, but they're not
real
big.
Well documented.
Okay, see where I'm sitting? If Will Hernandez was in my seat right now, his chest would touch the computer screen.
Right, he's got a big chest.
A barrel-chested, I mean, that's why he benched 225. 30.
Those calves, those hips. Stewart
Body Show. It also looks like he's got a pretty, big stomach as well, though, as I'm looking through some of these.
Dude, that guy is jacked.
He's a big dude. Is he also wearing an old cowboy collar?
Old school neck roll.
Is he wearing an old school neck roll?
Yeah, he likes that.
I got to admit, that's kind of what intrigues me the most.
You're kind of into that.
Yeah, I am. I'm not going to lie. I'm intrigued by the
Tom Cable, no go. An N-O-G-O.
He wouldn't like this guy.
No.
He'd be too good.
Yeah, and then he's going to draft him in Oakland, watch. Or Gruden will. Or Reggie McKenzie will. But yeah, just not a movement guy. Just not a second level. Not cut down in the zone run game. Not super athletic and all of that. But athletic enough. And more than anything, when Aaron
Donald... make this move in the first round.
I would make this move in the late.
Maybe not at 18, because you could trade back and still get him.
Yep.
Here's the only thing I just keep coming back to on this is, and by the way, I kind of like this guy. He's one of the names that you've talked about that intrigues me. Do they need a guard? I mean, I know you just kind of need good football players, right? But, the one thing they've tried to solidify here in the offseason is their interior offensive line play.
Yep.
Do they need a guard? Because he's not a tackle.
Just draft a guard. I mean, someone who's played guard all of his life, someone who wants to go to the Pro Bowl as a guard, not a go-between, not a hybrid, not a switchover, not a defensive lineman, a guard. I just want a draft, a high-level guard.
He is that.
Yes.
But so is DJ Fluker, right. And so is Ethan Posick. So what do you think?
I think Posick can play tackle in this league. I still do. I think he could play right tackle in this league. And he did a little bit of everything. I think he is capable of doing that.
God, it's just using a whole lot of extra more capital.
It is, but this is 5 years of a guy. Fluker is a one-year deal. And
that's true.
And gives you maybe a little soft landing spot if it doesn't work for Fluker that you got that. Yeah.
I can be convinced on this one, man. That's for sure. This gets to who you are supposed to be. A physical run-first football team.
Yep.
And if you don't like the way this draft looks in terms of outside edge rushers or guys who can dominate from the defensive line spot and you can't get Vita Vea or whatever,
yep.
I would sign up for this.
Yeah, that's the last thing I would just say to you, I don't think in this league you can have enough running backs and linemen. And the team that just won the Super Bowl proved that. They traded for Jay Ajayi. They had the other pieces. They've got four of them. And they drafted in the first round linemen. They traded. I think in this league right now, you cannot have enough of those two positions.
Mm. All right. Well, there you go. That's today's draft profile. Will Hernandez, big physical guard, especially in a phone booth out of UTEP.
And we have big news. One of Brock's longtime dreams is finally coming true in Europe.
What? Well, that's going to have to be next on Brock and Salk.
Meritage Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. When you hear the side is retired, we're referring to those old guys taking shots of BSB at the side of the bar.
You can't spell baseball without BSB.
Meritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
Hey, this is Danny O'Neill from the Danny Dave and Moore Show. Thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. I'd really appreciate it if you checked out Danny Dave and Moore. We're kind of charming, very fun. It's every afternoon from 3 to 7. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
Good news. Yeah! Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
Can talk to Greg Bishop. Should be in here in about 15 minutes. Looking forward to always a fun conversation with him. Although, the Humboldt part of it, I can't imagine will be fun. But his story about Jake Locker is interesting and I think provides a lot of new details on what happened with Jake, who's such a huge name around here, why he stepped away. And
do you think Greg ever desires to be the Grim Reaper Wickersham?
I don't think he's
where
that
you
kind
go
of guy.
In and you just shake the whole world up?
I don't think he's that kind of a right. Now, different style, I all would right. say. What's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
UW's Jen Cohen is the lowest paid athletic director of any Power 5 school.
That's good news for Jen because she's going to get paid really well here eventually whenever her deal comes up. It is bad news today as it sits there, but you know what? She has unbelievable market value. She's going to leverage this thing. She has to get paid an awful lot of money because she's done a phenomenal job. She didn't have a lot of experience as an AD beforehand, right? She had it in-house. She's an unbelievable fundraiser, and anybody knew. Any booster, anybody associated with the program knew and believed in her. It's why she got the gig without an AD title in a Power 5 conference. But now it's time for her to reap the benefit and the payday, too.
Yeah, I mean, look, this story has a little bit of everything all turned, you know, all in one. It's good news for Jen. I mean, if you read the story in the front page of the Times today, it says that, you know, the president of the school is saying, yeah, it's about time to remedy this fact and get Jen paid. And she deserves it. Every move she has made so far has essentially been gold since since taking over as the AD at Washington. And you're right, Brock. There are a lot of real facts and things that probably led to that number being what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has to raise a couple of eyebrows, right? I mean, in a society where women in general don't earn the same amount for the same jobs as men do, it's difficult not to look at it and say, okay, why is she last on this list?
This better be a game changer, and they get an opportunity to do it.
I would hope so. Right now, we were looking at the list in the Power 5 conferences. The highest paid woman was, what did I say, 30th? Right around 30th
Sandy Barber
on the list.
At Penn State.
Yeah, and after that, you have to go into the 40s.
And there wasn't, frankly, a lot of opportunity in the past. And now there is, and she's proven she can hit it out of the park.
Yeah, I wish the best for Jen. I think she's doing a killer job.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Shohei Ohtani left last night's start in the second inning with a blister on his pitching hand.
Don't put me in a position of saying good news that somebody's hurt. I am not going to be in a position where I'm going to say good news that somebody is hurt, especially
great
yesterday.
Great news.
Taiwan Walker, UCL, looks like he's probably going to need Tommy John. That's a bummer for a guy that always treated us very well. Yep. But
bad news and bad for baseball.
Baseball, but for us here in Seattle.
He's going to keep hitting. He's not going to go to the DL. He'll just keep hitting.
With a blister?
He refused to pitch for them,
I hope it gets worse. Because he keeps hitting and the blister keeps opening up. Because the good thing about a blister is you're not really hurt. It's not like he blew out his arm or something like that.
Right.
It's just like this nagging, annoying thing that he can't pitch through. Sounds great.
Didn't Kuma have a problem with his blister, too?
Kuma's throwing a little bit, by the way.
Ooh.
He's going to face live hitters in a sim game coming up here.
You know what? That was one of the theories that the balls are juiced now is because the rise in blisters that the league has had in the last
few
years.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's connected to blisters?
Yeah, the laces are actually a little bit more raised up, which is creating more blisters for guys who have a lot of movement.
Is it also changing a lot of the strikeout numbers because you're getting more movement on the ball?
As a trade-off.
Interesting.
Good news, bad news, no news.
By the way, we were wondering how big a deal Shohei Ohtani is, like outside, like whether or not he's the crossover candidate. This is a very, very informal study. But when I was down in San Francisco, I was asking a couple of my buddies who were, let's say, casual sports fans and even more casual baseball fans if they had heard of Shohei Ohtani, and neither had.
Who?
Like, I don't know who that is. Like, oh, he's a guy, he hits and he pitches. And they're like, oh, I think I've heard about that. Like, where is he doing it? Is he still in Japan? Like, no, he's here. He's in with the Angels. Oh,
never mind.
Is he any good? Like, oh, my God. All right, let's move it along here.
Former Nike executives are planning to build an MLB-capable stadium in Portland.
I think this has the possibility of being really, really good news. I don't know that it's going to happen still. I mean, I think this kind of ratchets up the pressure on Oakland to get something done, and maybe they're able to do that. But Portland is a big enough city to handle it, I think. And ultimately for the Mariners, I think it'd be good to have somebody nearby and a team where you don't have to travel halfway around the world to get there. Now, it'd be better if Tampa was moving to Portland than Oakland.
We had a conversation yesterday.
I think there would be good news for rivalry, man.
Yeah,
you know how much I love rivalry.
And we love Portland. Little brother down there, I-5. I was thinking about this. I know. Did I say that, Lydia? Did you shake your head, the little brother thing? Yeah, it's not nice. I don't need to say that. They're a great city down there. Could baseball really be benefited from smaller stadiums? We're talking about with the NHL and the NBA and small arenas. And I think about spring training, that San Francisco game. And I don't know, in Japan, are the stadiums a little bit smaller? You were referencing the fan bases.
I don't think so.
They seat 40, 45, 50,000
people. I mean, I was only there once, and it was a while ago.
I think if there is a sport, and when they do that stadium down in Portland, I just wonder if there is a way that it seats 25 and then can expand to 40 for the playoffs. Right? That you just, but as far as the setting and environment.
Would be pretty small.
Oh.
But I'll tell you, I mean, Fenway was always around 35, and that intimate atmosphere of 35, I think, is probably preferable to 50.
Yes, yep. But you're just watching game after game, and it looks like the giveaway is be a seat for the night,
right?
And it just is like, oh, this just feels bad. It looks bad. And when we're spring training, there's 13,000 there in San Francisco. It's unbelievable. It's just awesome, the energy in that thing. You're right, Fenway, when I was there. And it feels so closed in with the city all around it, too. But I just wonder if baseball may be one that could benefit from a little smaller stadium.
All right. I think that's good news. That's good news, bad news, no news. What was Brock's big European news? What's going on?
Man. Okay.
What are the Euros doing?
Yeah. Get ready for this.
All right.
According to Darren Ravel, EuroLeague basketball last night introduced new technology where players, coaches, everyone involved in the game wears a sensor. Measurements are taken. The data is delivered to fans. It includes the height of a jump on a dunk, the level of the crowd noise, the pressure a player is feeling with their heartbeat, what the coach's emotions are.
Where is it going to be on TV or in the stadium?
Right now, it's on an app. You download the app. You could probably get it at home, in the stadium, on the subway, wherever you want.
I am all in. I am all in.
That's pretty sweet, man.
I've said for years, get that heart rate monitor. It's in the shoulder pads. It's right on the heart anyway. It'd be very accurate. And I'd love to know the heart rate of these guys, both college football running as much as they do, the NFL game, the big fellas, the kicker, when poor Blair Walsh is going out there and his heartbeat's probably like my 8-year-old son in the batter's box, you know, out there, and just what is going on. Or the opposite of Hauschka, who's like below normal, you know. It'd just be a fascinating component to it.
There are some cool things I think you can do with the future of viewing sports. And, you know, I had kind of written about this weekend. Because were you in when we were talking about the article that was suggesting, maybe it was Danny who was here when we were talking about it, suggesting that we should segment out more of like the fan experiences when you go to a game?
Oh, no, I was here. Yeah.
And I'm not in for all of that at all. But I do think there's some cool things. Remember when Taylor brought me to that esports thing here at the International?
Oh, yeah.
And I love those bracelets that they put on. And every time they got close to a big moment happening, the bracelets would start to vibrate. And then when the game ended or somebody won, the bracelets would start blinking. Going crazy. I just think that would be so much fun in more of a traditional sports environment.
Yeah.
Right? Every third down, big third down, and everybody's bracelets or something start blinking, and then you get to stop, and it's lighting up all over the stadium. Like, I think that would just add to the experience, and there's a lot of cool stuff you could do. Throw this right onto the list as well, man. Yep. I would love to watch and see what's going on with the guys' heart rates. All right. That's good news, bad news, no news. We do that every single day at 8:45. Coming up next, going to talk to Greg Bishop, one of our favorites. He's been around for... Oh, in fact, he's walking in the door right now. Getting excited. We'll talk to Greg here in a minute on Brock and Salk.